Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted small business podcast host. I'm here with Jules Novkova, PhD, who's going to introduce herself and tell us why we should trust her as she introduces a little bit of her past, her current experience, and what the name and brand is that she's building.
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you for the invitation. I'm Jules. I'm a business psychologist, and I help people understand better the human side of their business, why people aren't reacting to their vision in the way that they want to, why they can't connect with the clients the way they want to, everything that makes our messy human life complicated when we're trying to build something meaningful and trying to be useful for people, bringing our talent and vision outside to the world. So it's not only about the leadership. It's about building a system where people naturally feel connected, nurturing and supporting each other while actually producing and commercializing their goals, vision, and I've been saying this.
Love that. I do see three very expensive letters at the end of your title. What exactly was the nature of the study that you did? PhD usually costs a lot of human capital and also some dinero. So what was that educational journey like, and how did it springboard you into your current venture?
My PhD thesis was around exploring human creativity and innovativeness. I was generally interested in why people are creative and innovative, why leaders are different in the way they behave. Is it something connected to their natural, personal DNA, or is it something that you have to do? So the egg or the chicken story here as well was involved. But during my PhD research, I was so focused on researching the personality traits that differentiate effective managers and leaders from people who are just following someone else's vision. And I figured out that we do know that there are some traits are correlated positively with human creativity and innovativeness, but there is no single predictor. If you have that trait, you are going to be more productive and creative, for example, or innovative. But what I figure out is that there is someone very, very big predictor. If you are rigid and inert, you can't show creativity or innovativeness, even if you have them as a natural gift from a part, that part being in that journey being a human being. So this is why I discovered that human trait, like rigidity and inertia, are so grounded to how we think, how we feel, how we make decisions, how we behave. And we can reverse that once we know that we are rigid and inert. And I figure out that leaders, managers, entrepreneurs, people who are living that fast-paced reality actually need to understand how to debug their mindset, make their behavior more creative and flexible around the fast-paced reality that they're running, and the messy human connections. So this is how I became a consultant in startups and small businesses, because I want them to be open, fast, adaptive, and to build on the go, with the flow. And this is not going to happen if you are feeling stuck with your own beliefs, your own decision makings, and if you feel not ready to be open to explore new ways. And this is how you become naturally more innovative and more creative. Does it make sense?
Absolutely. My question about that rigidity, is that nature or is that nurture? Or is that nature that you have nurtured?
I believe both of them. There are some stable traits that we know that are connected to openness to new experiences. Some people are naturally gifted with that DNA of their personality, but also it's depending on where you've been raised, what's your socializing factors, your parents, your school, your teachers, your friends, early stages of development, and of course, early professional years. So that's a lot for a human being. And at some point, people need to figure out how to unblock that behavior one step at a time. And to be even more messy, we have personal mechanisms that blocks us from and prevents us from being able to be more aware what's going on, who we are. Our nature is self-protecting by design. So we need mirrors, tools, and special environment where we can explore when we become rigid, why we became inert, what was a trigger for us. So it's about situations and factors and combination of personal traits and personal history. And it needs some time. We need some time to detangle that. But after a while, you understand the DNA of your personality and your personal creativity and even innovativeness. And you know what triggers you and you know how to overcome that. One step at a time, and in a while, you have motion and inertia.
So I had the unpleasant experience of being held up at gunpoint, but the plus side is that the therapy that I went to afterwards actually changed my life, because she explained that it's not just fight or flight as a response; you also have freeze, That's actually a very large misunderstood reaction to stressful situations. And I also realized, since I was driving by, it happened in my very neighborhood next to the pond as I drove into back to my house every single day. And then I argued with my wife and I felt the same numb, detached feeling that I had developed every time I drove by that. And there was this amygdala feeling, I call it. And I realized that I had developed an expression of that same freeze to that psychological stimulus of arguing was the same freeze that I felt pondering, okay, did I do something wrong? Should I have done something differently to not get mugged? So it seems to me that extends to, you know, our business scenarios. As small business owner myself, as many as all of the small business owners that I talk with, it's not a proposition without stress. And stress where you are sometimes under personal attack, or you feel psychologically stressed because of the pressure of it. So is that an extension? Is that a causative element? Is that related in your experience? Or am I just throwing spaghetti at the wall? Does that make sense as a theory?
Spot on, actually. That's a foundation. Business is by design stressful environment. Because we have this great big unknown, a lot of uncertainty, we are running on the go, trying to understand how to build a process, how to build a procedure to react in a particular situation, how to explain what you do to your teams or partners, how to translate your visions to customers and transform them into actual users. All of that creates a lot of stress. And of course, that we are running on fight or flight regime most of the time. And in a while, because we are slowly gathering stress factors that actually increase the risks from burning out, our freeze state becomes the natural state. And that's a problem in business, because you can be creative when you are running, trying to escape stressful situations like fight or flight. It's our design. Amygdala, it's not preventing you from being creative, but it's preventing you from being innovative. In order to be able to see, observe your own thoughts, decision-making, goals, and vision, you need to slow down. You need to reduce emotional load and to have cognitive clarity to be able to observe your thoughts and decision-making and see them from a different angle. So when a business consultant like me jumps and shows you with mirrors different angles and perspectives from client's perspective, leadership perspective, VC's perspective, whatever you are trying to build and with whom you're trying to build, they all have perspectives. If you're not able to deep dive into those perspectives because you are rigid and inert, you're trying to protect yourself, you're trying to not lose more energy, well, this is a point when you're really starting to break the connections inside your mind, but also in your communication and your behavior. And this is something that we can prevent to some extent. I'm not saying that we can make that uncertainty more or less risky or more confident about what's the next move. But at some point, to some extent, in some situation, we do have that knowledge now. So it's about understanding how to operate and navigate the DNA of your own personality. Where are the friction points inside your business system? What are the specifics inside your market? And what will influence the decision-making of your clients and your teams or partners? So it's a lot of perspectives that you have to hold into your inside your mind, inside your consciousness. And it takes some time. can take some time and practice not get triggered by everything new, uncomfortable, or even unpleasant. Just to face down, to feel okay with rejection, with misunderstandings, with misalignments, and not feel threatened, but okay, that's in data. We need to try to pivot, to switch perspective, to switch a lens, to try something else. Curiosity. And this comes hand in hand with prefrontal cortex, which means you need to be able to execute decisions, to execute your vision. Without action, business is just having a good idea. And if you're constantly frozen and rigid and inert because you're trying to preserve energy, you won't be able to produce that level of cognitive clarity and emotional stability to be more innovative in practice.
Let's say that you're in an industry where you're installing windows, you're bringing concrete fences to somebody's backyard, you're repairing stucco, you're a home contractor. Where's the creativity, in your opinion? How should people understand that phrase of creativity when you're in a service business versus the creativity that's a little more obvious to me or most people when you're like, oh, that's a creative marketing a campaign that you created. That's, we need to create collateral for our marketing. Is, where do you see in like the home services businesses where you've been consulting, where does the creativity lie? How do you define that word and what you mean by unlocking it?
I love this question. People think that creativity is something that is connected to the way you produce music or art or photography or whatever you're doing, like something creative. That's the first association. Creativity is by design the way you make decisions. You can be a brilliant mathematician or physicist or a brilliant doctor. You can bring new angles and new ways to communicate, see, or explain stuff. So in services, to be creative, for example, it would mean new way that you craft things together, new way that you serve things together, new way that you build a relationship with people, new way that you make them feel about who you are and what you do. So creativity is more about the process itself, the tools that you're going to use, whether you're creating a new tool, new app, new technology, even new way of asking people stuff around the day-to-day operations and day-to-day interaction. It could be perceived as, okay, those people are creative. So it's about understanding what makes us different when we communicate with each other, when we exchange ideas, visions, or just being helpful and being nice to each other. So even with the even most boring businesses can be transformed radically, if especially because of that creativity of ours.
I'm curious what your take is of what is it about the ownership role of a founder, a builder, a small business owner, that what is the nature of a business culture that you create with this entity, with yourself? What is the how do you encourage your clients, your consults, to consider the structure that they're bringing? Because it comes up from the marketing side, in a lot of the previous interviews that I've done, from the side of, you know, how are we authentic? You know, like we want to have a marketing message, and, you know, most of the best SEOs are like, well, it needs to be authentic. And I always push back. I'm like, well, but it's marketing, so there's always a performative aspect. So are you like, they're like, oh, but you have to put these rules in, you know, and have people within your organization, you know, follow them. So how can you, how do you approach the concept of culture within a small business and maybe some do's and don'ts?
Okay. I love this question because it's actually, connecting many different scientific fields in psychology from personal psychology and personal development point of view. Your question about authenticity, I also get that question from business consultants and people who are trying to develop personal brand, like manager, established leaders on the market. What means to be authentic? They believe that it's building a mask, a facade that you're putting on in public. In psychology, true authenticity comes hand in hand with alignment. Whatever you say, you just do, and people just follow. It's that simple. But you need to understand what are the things that you can do on the go, every single day, and your motives. Why? Why am I here? Why am I doing whatever I'm doing? Am I ready to do this without money, without price and publicity? If I have to be instilled and alone, invisible, will I continue to that, even for no other reason, just because that's me and my meaning? In marketing, because behavioral analysis and behavioral economics is part of my job to understand economic behavior of buyers and users dynamics, we translate that authenticity into simple way that people bring consistency. You need to be consistent. And this is perceived as authenticity. And creativity here is to understand how to translate your own authentic view into many languages to trust, make safe, to make the environment safe enough and to build trust with people who can understand your perspective. Creativity is building a bridge, understanding that they are going to be more rigid or more inert when it comes to your new vision, your new idea, and giving them enough time, tools, mirrors, and safe space to explore whatever you're trying to build. It's good to focus on what they need. It's bad when you just try to self-promote. It's good when you try to understand why they hesitate to ask questions, make changes, or adopt solutions. It's bad to push them emotionally and convince them, you need this right now. Are they? Give them some touch points, make it soft, land hard, be clear, lead with clarity and structure, and people will come whenever they feel ready. When founders ask me, is there a time where people actually buy? And I say, yeah, it's always now. The problem is that we don't know for each person when that now will be a reality. But we can build a process that helps them move the decision-making process. We can make them feel less fearing, less afraid, less scared, less lost inside your business model. And we can make them feel more inspired, empowered, seen, validated, and to know that with or without you, they can solve that problem. That it's not the problem by design. The decision here is that I want you to help me and support me and lead me when I'm trying to solve that problem. So when we talk about market crawl or fit, for example, people are obsessed with problem solution fit. Well, my job is to help them understand the dynamic behind the market product fit, because you need to understand the market, and the market is not a static dashboard and data that you have. That's people, real people with real needs, real personal stories that they have limited amount of time, energy, money to solve a problem that causes them some pain or psychological and even emotional discomfort. From my point of view, empathy and authentic leadership, it's the foundation, and you need to be creative and open to understand why something causes that much pain to your client. For you, that's going to be irrelevant, but for them, it's going to be distress. This is why I made that connection in business.
Would you say then that empathy is a very strong business tool? Because, you know, I can think of, you know, a business is distressed because they have to jump through regulations and they need an oxygen monitor to comply with regulation B72/B76. So they need a solution. So Pure Air Monitoring comes along. They've got an oxygen monitor. So it's the empathy that that product manufacturer, that business owner making that product, it's a display on behalf of the business and the people representing it to the consumer that creates a connection. Would that be a good way to phrase it?
Well, probably for some people, this will make much, much more sense compared to the more academic way people like me are trying to explain it in a more abstract way. But whenever you are flying, you need to understand the dynamic of how am I going to feel when I have to put that oxygen mask on myself first? What are going to be the first thing that I'm going to feel, think, or feeling that I have to do and I won't be ready to do? For example, as a parent, because I have two kids, always makes me feel bad. The instruction, put your mask first on your own face and then take care of your kids. That's counterintuitive. In business, it should be just like that. You need as a founder just to understand what makes you distressed during that negotiation process, during that sales process, and to be bootstrapped around what you need, what is going to be your boundary in terms of terms, money, time, restrictions, to explain that in a clear way so that people actually understand your side as a partner, what you need to stay hydrated and oxygenated in order to do your job and deliver that. And then try to build a solution for them that actually matches their need and pace. And if they can't breathe, okay, imagine half of the time my clients have the strategy. We build the strategy, so we put the mask on their face, but they still can't breathe. So another dimension here, and that is in the field of business psychology, is to help people remember how to breathe, which means how to use the tool that we are trying to sell them as a solution or the framework or the product. How to use that in a safe way that actually makes sense for the users. For example, with the SaaS companies or tech companies that I'm working with, they are over-engineering so many features and they're totally misunderstanding that clients really do not enjoy them, all of them, constantly. They need something simple, but because they're obsessed with the building part, because they enjoy building, they just misinterpret the needs. So sometimes we have to remove to see what is going to stay and what's really missing and what needs to be added later, because humans need that. So psychology in business is like building with invisible blocks, constructor, Lego parts. It's funny. But it takes some time to understand, okay, what's this? Where did it come from? We see patterns, but we need time to isolate whether this is a root cause or is a consequences and what causes that friction or this type of behavior. So we are not running an assumption. We are trying to build hypotheses to explore the system, the environment and climate. And then we judge why human behavior is running that into that direction. We're not stigmatizing people based on their personal traits and personal behaviors.
That's fascinating because I have a background in SaaS, both from an SEO perspective, turned into a product manager situation. And I can definitely see from some of my consulting as an SEO with different SaaS companies and using dozens of them myself, and I made one, that there is a constant pressure to add another feature, to develop another, you know, expand another branch. You know, I came from a SaaS called Raven Tools, and they started with just SEO, and they tacked on social media monitoring and then paid ad monitoring. It just kind of added these things until it just collapsed under like too much disparate stuff. So it's fascinating for you to point out that part of that was from a psychological standpoint and not just like a business structure problem of, you know, marketing decisions, but those decisions were reached through the psychology. Unfortunately, there were three founders. And so that's probably, you know, you got three cooks in the kitchen. That's probably why there's three times as much stuff coming up. What other surprising aspects of business does psychology play into that most of your consults or clients, it doesn't occur to them when they start?
People sometimes are very obsessed with their own passion, ideas, vision, their own creativity. You said it, going back to the SaaS tech companies. Those guys are really enjoying what they do. People can envy them. Like they're like kids playing with the sand on the playground, just enjoying the building stuff. Sometimes they really forget that the main idea is not only to build for yourself, to indulge your own desire to build, but also to be useful and helpful. And you mentioned a couple of minutes ago culture. It's about, from my perspective, business is an activity created by humans for humans. And for humans, it's never enough to do the right thing or to use the right tool. It's always about feeling right while using the right tools or doing the right thing. As a founder, you know that you are constantly bombarded with, you must do this and this and that. And sometimes you feel like, this is so unnatural to me. I can't do that. Why this should be the right way? This is always the fact. So imagine culture inside a team. We don't feel okay while we're building something that we know that's good, that is going to break the dynamics, break the cycles, also create tension, and people aren't happy to build together anymore. This creates a lot of friction between the operating team and the leadership management teams as well. So they also do not enjoy their roles and they have internal conflicts. Even if the conflicts are not visible, escalating, they are still there. The tension is so visible. You can cut through with a knife. You can see that. You can see the Slack conversation and still can be able to track down bad culture, toxic culture, performative culture. And the problem is that this is always transferred inside, outside the organization. What's going on inside is always transferring outside. And clients can experience that as well. Because this is churn. People aren't returning back. They don't feel good enough. When they use, they need help, they need support. At some point, we're going back and circling back around creativity in client service and client-centered human development and business development. So climate, it's so crucial. Happy teams produce happy clients. And happy clients motivate happy teams. And leaders are happy when they see that they're gluing things and people and ideas together. So psychology is all the way here.
I'm curious, you know, I live on websites. You know, I make them, I build them, I consult over them. I help people optimize them to rank for search engines, for LLMs. What, from your perspective, should people understand about a website and how people interact with it from a psychological standpoint? Because there's definitely something different from like going to a bazaar and there's a stand there and a guy has a bunch of coins out and he's displaying them and you think, oh, that's a neat quarter, I'm going to buy that, versus going online and you're looking through these pages and then you decide to buy some quarter, you know, somebody selling coins online, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. How does the psychology of that process differ? And how should a business understand, you know, the portion of their business that is online versus offline?
When you have on-site connection or a phone call with a client, you can always listen to their friction points if you experience enough. You can navigate how they frame and talk about their problems. You have this good intuitive logic, what's going on. You can always repair that. It's not like that when you have static page, for example, and you have to build that before. You have to have that logic predefined. Let me have a question for you. How many founders come to you without clear vision why they need a website? Someone told them, you definitely have to have a website. How many of them really know the role of the website inside their business?
Fewer than I would like.
Yeah. Okay, second question here. How many people come to you with a clear map of their website? Like infrastructure, depth, horizontals, verticals, client journey. I want my clients to jump here, see the click there, go there, learn that. Step by step, like 3 clicks before the purchase. How many people come to you at this point with that level of clarity, branding, structure, predefined logic? One pager.
One person I've ever consulted with ever came to me with a totally clear picture of their conversion point, all mapped out. This is everything that this is what's gone wrong. This is what's gone right. All of the analytics have come from here. And it was one of my best consults because I'm like, okay, well, this is where it's broken. You need to do this. Because they had all of those numbers ready to go.
Understand that. So business psychology here actually is a pre-designing and pre-building step. And I really cherish to help that, to give that support to people and celebrate with them mapping the roadmap of their business. We know that if we can put that on paper, one page, then we can use that to easily translate every vision that they have into and transform that into blog article, website, social media account, everything that you need in order to position yourself, get visibility, get credibility you need. So Business psychology actually helps you map, and we draw that map, like visual representation, roadmap. Then we build a strategy how we're going to achieve that step by step. Then we talk about user experience on the website. It's all about psychology. Then we talk about copywriting, how you're going to position yourself in terms of wording. What about colors? What about other stimulation? How you're going to interact with your visitors? So I've seen so many vibe-coded websites without personalization, any type of personalization. They're good. I approve them as MVP. I also use vibe coding just to build that one page or one map and then going straight to builders like you that really need to put strong foundation here, custom code to make that sustainable. But people really need to understand the role of the website. Not every business really needs a website, to be honest. For example, I have a beautiful client building amazing on-site offline businesses like flower shops. Of course that they can have website. Some of them aren't ready to invest in such expensive tool for themselves because they're running local, small, and they invest heavily in, let's say, social media accounts and interactions, and they feel that it's okay for me. So I'm not advocating that you have to have a website. I just recommend to build on your own land, not on borrowed land. I'm advocating for having what I call virtual home. And for me, website, it's like having a virtual home of your ideas, journaling about your own journey, journaling every single idea, product, service that you want to design, and keep that in your archive for someone else's journey to inspire them. This is what I do as well. For 15 years, I have two websites for my local Bulgarian audience in my native language and for my global audience. So I understand how important is that. But those websites, I transfer them many millions of times to be up to date in terms of design. So what is the biggest challenges from your experience when it comes to building a website? Where is the actual bottleneck with founders?
I think there's generally, when I audit a site, it's weird because I almost always come back to, let's copy the text off of this page and paste it into a blank document, not looking at the pictures that you've added. And what did you actually say about your business? What would you say you do here? You know, somebody comes in blind, they're just reading this, no pictures. What does it actually say? You know, because it's, we have the best customer service. We're the fastest in delivery. Meaningless. It doesn't actually say what it is exactly that they do. And the number of sites that I've audited where they actually say clearly what they do, where they do it, how they do it, and back it up with social proof is very, very low. It's usually like the biggest rub, you know, the biggest audit item is like, hey, let's go back to these fundamentals. And like, you know, you obviously had a salesperson kind of pushing like, hey, we want these values. You know, it's this weird dichotomy that comes up maybe in different industries. The few beauty salons that I've ever consulted with, he's like, I don't want too much text on my site. I'm like, okay, well, how about enough text to actually say what it is that you do? Yeah, I agree that aesthetics is very important for your business. But that doesn't mean that that's a substitute, because a salon as a phrase, as a word, a salon could be for a dog. A salon could be for nails. It could be for hair. You could get facials at a salon. You could get red light therapy. Just saying that you're a salon or that you're taking a picture of what you think a salon really should look like is not the same as communicating, especially for search engines, that you're a salon, you're located here, these are your hours, this is how you book, this is the phone number, and these are the services that we give and how much they cost. The fundamentals are so often missing from my perspective.
Yeah. For my local audience, for example, I built an app that allows you to answer simple questions and builds map for you where you explore whatever you're doing, because I figure out that female founders are struggling with clarity and structure, and that's really in fact their branding, positioning, marketing and sales heavily long run. And because I work with product-based companies and tech companies, for them I developed this framework that allows them to explore simultaneously the product, the market, the team, the leadership, and of course the processes. And we align all of that on the top of the client journey and trying to transform a person from a non-buyer to loyal user. And then we try to explain how people react to the product, why here, why now, what is actually going on inside the customer's head right now, what are the questions that are going to bother or concern the client. For example, I don't have that article on my blog specifically with that headline, but I had a client. She said that after she had very frustrating day in her restaurant, she Googled, what should I do when my business is bugging? And she found one of my articles in my local native language for my local audience, and she just called me and ask what's wrong. And with her, believe it or not, the problem was so simple and actually not very expensive to resolve. It was about the menu, the way she was describing the menu, with little rewriting, just copywriting work, but with marketing and positioning perspectives, and explaining the pricing model behind that, just putting that into the recipes and nurturing the fact that the restaurant wanted to express the vision they have. Just for a couple of weeks, we were able to smooth and remove the frictions with the clients because they were frustrated because there was mismatch between the pricing model and menu design. So once we removed that friction, people felt much, much happier. So sometimes it's not about complex decisions, because thinking about complexity means expensive or time-consuming in business. But we need to think about systemic solutions. And that's not necessarily comes hand-in-hand with a lot of investments in time and money, because it's about human system and how human make decisions, how human decide. So back to the website. I often use website as a way to help people actually see visual decision-making map around what they do and how they struggle. Add to this the AI layer, for example. When they do not have that clarity one page that explains the depth and the visions and the horizon, but also the don'ts. What I'm not, the negative keywording framing is very important nowadays. They can use AI in their work and build workflows. So my job is to help them and support them actually automate repetitive tasks when they need to be outsourced to AI, and to keep human in the loop at the point where AI will distort the authenticity and empathy in a way that actually will diverse your brand vision outside, and we multiply that across multi or omni-channel communication. So that's another part of my job. I didn't expect that 5 years ago, but here I am now running human systems and human AI systems as well. So what are the friction points with AI inside your job? Because you mentioned website building and AI-driven workflows.
Yes. It's growing, and it's interesting because, Matt Brooks of SEOTerix says, you know, AI, third-party tools like ChatGPT, Claude, they're your most popular but least trained customer support representative. You know, I just did an interview with a legendary SEO and consultant who's been in it since the 90s. And, you know, he said that we often forget the entity layer behind the scenes of we need to define the entity that we're working with. You know, have we said where we're located clearly, not just on our site, but also thinking across the web itself? What does the graph of visibility or detail about your business actually look like? And, you know, I absolutely agree that you need to own your piece of the internet, but you also have to cultivate your garden in somebody else's fortress. You know, there's all these walled gardens everywhere now: LinkedIn, Facebook, directories, glassdoor.com, etc. There are reflections, through the looking glass of what your business looks like online. And, you know, I I have like a specialty service where I help organize trash cleanups in communities on behalf of businesses so that they can have a bigger reflection. Because just doing that is great. But if you take the time to make sure that, oh, it gets listed on all of the event sites, and we did outreach to local universities to get listed on their pages, those are the extra detail steps of any marketing effort to try to get the best reflection of your values by considering how the things that you can do with your business IRL appear on URLs.
Yeah. You are not building alone. You need to build with the idea of distribution of your vision. Probably if you're just starting your business or your business is stalling, first thing that I will focus on is, for example, the clarity of your positioning. You call it authenticity. I agree. It's all about being authentic, whether you are saying stuff and doing stuff and they are lying together. The second thing is going to be the distribution. Mirroring back through internet, entire network system that you can use to mirror back whatever you're doing. What it is, how people actually understand that, how they translate that. For example, people like me experienced a lot of friction points here. I've run multiple simulations through many AIs and just hitting the same wall. Because I'm building under NDAs, I'm creating intellectual property, I'm creating frameworks and culture that become the part and the soul and the heart of a business, I can't talk about my case studies, even aggregated data. And because I bring clarity, creativity, and innovativeness, I really can't randomize my own samples. So I don't have enough exposure when it comes to case studies. People say, tell me, show me, point to me. And I say, I can't. Sorry. ask me as much as you want, but it's awful to see mirrored back in review, say, okay, that's self-proclaimed, for example. No enough data to support that. And I'm like, okay, I have to accept that. I said, I won't build a brand that actually destroys everything that you just built, because people are happy to own whatever you built for them and to not say out loud, okay, that's not entirely me. That's not fair. And when you become a consultant, you know that at some point you can't separate the process from the two originating parts. We become something altogether. And that's a deal I sealed many years ago. I didn't expect that it's going to be a boomerang in my face as well. But that's the part of the journey. So now I don't have enough data to support any claims. I don't do claims for that reason. And I do not promote brands or people adding my name. For example, I really don't like when people say stuff that they are leading some process and increasing something with 30-45%. That's not fair. It's not you. It's the system, the team, the culture, everything together. So I don't like that we are living in an era where people are just pushing numbers and decide, and that's going to be the key performance indicators, the numbers, because those numbers are play, team play, not solo. I can claim that those numbers are mine, but still, that's going to be a backlash here, a lot of tsunamis.
I greatly understand that as a SEO consultant. You know, part of the challenge that we're facing right now, in my opinion, as you know, AI tools come in and the visibility of attribution diminishes from social media, diminishes from these additional, you know, the AI overview layer. For a while, it wasn't perfect, but you could strongly attribute, you know, oh, hey, we did an SEO campaign, it had this impact. But we really, you know, to be the most effective SEOs that I've been talking to, it's really about understanding our role as SEO consultants of being collaborators and not as our own standalone channel, but understanding, hey, with the email team, you know, there's an organic component, because if we published part of what they pushed by email on a page, then search engines could find that, people could find that, traffic could find it, and it would increase the over aggregate value of it. Oh, hey, we're doing an event next week. Well, did we take time to set aside bandwidth to submit to local event sites? No? But what about our partner? Did they add a link to us? Did they mention us? Did they push over on social media? Like, those are the type of questions where, you know, a savvy SEO consultant is going to find those niches and opportunity to find the dirt and soil of the organization to grow it. But it's not, it's different than, oh, your website needs 20 more keywords. You need 4 more backlinks. And I can do those things. It's much less, it's more squishy. It's more wibbly wobbly.
Yeah.
No, I totally feel that too. You know, the number of NDAs that I'm under is probably fewer than yours. And I can speak more obliquely about some of the crash courses or, you know, the anecdotes of mistakes. It's really why people hire SEO consultants, because you're hiring our mistakes. You know, you're hiring us because we've made expensive mistakes or seen other expensive mistakes be made and know what they look like and be able to undo them. So there's an aspect of the consulting role that, you're right, it becomes hybridized. Like, can I truly claim this, all the SEO success? Only in very rare cases where it's my own project site, you know, where, oh, hey, I did this and it specifically this. But even that, you know, there's an aspect of the black box nature of Google of, like, I don't know exactly why, but something in there definitely worked. So I feel you on that score of, you know, I want to self-promote. I want to be able to promote myself, but I can't, you know, disclose all of the stuff I did. But I guess that comes to the other side of, you know, getting in situations like these where you can speak conceptual.
Yeah, you're touching those very soft points. Now imagine when it comes not to something non-personal, like a blog and a link. That's hard power in business. That's two. Now think about the founders in intimate reality, internal life, your own fears, mistakes, the psychological price that you're paying. For example, to whom a founder can call and actually cry or laugh at the ridiculous reality that we're facing. You can't complain in front of your family, partners, team members. That's a solo journey. Business psychology covers that layer as well. We create that confined reality where people actually say, I'm not sure that this is the good decision. I know that there is no good enough decision. I have to choose, and this will hurt people I love or I care or my clients, but I have to do that. Think about the COVID, the pandemic, and the massive decision that we had to make. So many people were affected. We were trying to protect brands, protect connections and clients, running on thin air and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of scare and sadness and grief. That reality was so big and obvious for everyone simultaneously. But on small scale, crises are daily, local, global, political, health, economical crises. You see that crisis is every single day for us. And for global communities, probably we can measure that at scale. But now imagine small countries like my own. For small countries, we are constantly bombarded by bigger decisions, bigger challenges, and we have to cope and to preserve our culture, our ways, our local things, how we want to make things. And in business, that's not an easy task. So when to whom you can call and say, I'm failing, I feel bad, I'm struggling, I'm burning out, I'm sick, I don't know what to do, I'm quitting, I don't want to quit. This is something that psychology also tries to cover, as I said, but can you put a price tag on that? Or can you use that and say, okay, I saved that guy's life, or that girl really needed a refreshment? No, it's not a detox. No, you can't outrun with a marathon that problem or drink a cucumber juice. You can't. You need to sit here, face your fear, let the pain and discomfort go through your body. Try to make peace with that and try to work with that. Psychology won't wipe away your suffering and difficult emotions. It will give you the tools and time and energy to actually understand how to conserve and preserve your own energy while you're building mental clarity and stability and supporting your emotional resilience without harming yourself and burning out. That's a lot. And I am also happy that I don't have to tell those personal stories and put people's brand and story outside just to prove my value. On the other hand, without being visible, I became a great cardinal, so mastering the art of being the second in the relationship. I enjoy being part of this private type community where people refer me to each other and say, no worries, she's very discreet and confidentiality with her is 100% covered and her team as well. You can go there, talk with them. Don't have to protect your story, protect your ego, because those people are famous. Okay, they project power, they project stability. They are the visionaries, the leaders that actually lead others. It's not okay just to stay and, okay, it's okay to be vulnerable, but not during the crisis. You can own that story and share that, but later, not when you're transforming. So crisis, personal and business and family are part of the founder's journey. And I can't separate the personal life from the business part. It's all you, all of your creativity, innovativeness, blend together. It's the way you solve your life.
Absolutely brilliant. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And if anybody wants to connect with you, can you shout out if there's a social media platform where you're most active, or the name of your website? I'll make sure that it gets linked in the show notes so that people can find and have that conversation with you, get you a little bit of that distribution that you're looking for.
You can find me on LinkedIn and, of course, on my global platform, JulesPsy.com. My brand is Jules Psychology because this is how I see business and psychology. There's a lot of free frameworks that you can find on my platform. You can use them. You can apply them with your local AI to transform your decision-making, because it's not a problem, the strategy or getting ideas and being creative, innovative. As we said, the actual problem is the actual execution. So people don't call me for new ideas. They call me when they feel that there's a friction and they can't close the gap between their own vision and execution. So don't wait until it's too late. Always try to make the next move. That's going to be my motivational idea here. Execution. 80% of the work is failing and trying again and again and rebuilding and restructuring yourself while doing that. That's the entrepreneurial journey, I believe.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for this conversation, Jeremy. Looking for the next one.